for joining us. I'm Diane Rehm. Last week, the FDA acknowledged, quote, some concern about bisphenol A, the widely used plastic additive found in many food containers. In 2008, the Canadian government declared BPA a toxic substance and banned it in baby bottles. Two of Canada's leading environmentalists join me in the studio. They've conducted experiments on themselves to determine how much BPA and other toxins are accumulating in their bodies from common household and workplace items. Rick Smith is Executive Director of Environmental Defense Canada. Bruce Laurie is president of the Ivy Foundation, and together they've written a new book. It's titled Slow Death by Rubber Duck, The Secret Danger of Everyday Things. Do join us, 800-433-8850. Send us your email to drshow@wamu.org. Or join us through Facebook. Send us a tweet. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning, Diane.
Rick, I wonder if you would talk about the first sentence, the introduction to your book. It seems somewhat counterintuitive to have a book with the word death in the title.
Yeah, we say in the right off the bat, the first sentence of the book, we say that this is a hopeful book. We designed our experiments to really take an optimistic look at this issue. I think, frankly, as you talk about these toxic chemicals that have crept into our lives, that are present in the nooks and crannies of our homes, and in these innocuous items. It's easy for people to freak out about this. It's easy for people to conclude that there's very little they can do to protect themselves. And so what we wanted to do with the book is to demonstrate some simple things that people can do to protect themselves and their families from these chemicals.
Now, specifically on BPA, which the FDA has recently spoken out about. We invited the FDA to appear on the program this morning. We received a message from Michael Herndon, who said the FDA is declining your interview request, but they did provide a statement which reads as follows. FDA now has some concerns about BPA based on the results of recent studies, and that's why we are conducting more definitive research to resolve key outstanding questions. In the meantime, we recommend that families follow some reasonable steps that are both good household practices and will also reduce exposure to BPA. What do you make of that statement, Rick Smith?
Well, the language is a little bit dense, but to cut to the chase, this is a huge change in approach by the FDA. I mean, this is an agency that during the Bush years was working hand in glove with the chemical industry to defend bisphenol A and other toxic chemicals at all costs, to delay or to prevent proper regulation of these chemicals. So for the FDA to now be saying, look, we have some concern, we agree with the assessment of the National Toxicology Program, we agree with the industry's approach to try to reduce bisphenol A in infant formula can linings, that is a very major change in approach, and I think a clear signal to parents that if you have baby bottles or sippy cups with bisphenol A in the plastic, that it's time to get rid of those.
Bruce Laurie, tell me about the Canadian government's actions.
Yeah, well, about 18 months ago, the Canadian government was reviewing the health evidence on bisphenol A and decided to ban bisphenol A containing baby bottles. So we're, you know, we were working very closely with them. I think that they took a close look at the available evidence, and they came to the conclusion that it simply was too risky to be having little babies. They're the ones that are most affected by these chemicals, to have little babies exposed to baby bottles.
And pregnant women and exposed to any items containing bisphenol A?
That's right.
But how do people know? I mean, this is a substance that's used rather widely, is it not?
This is one of the most commonly manufactured chemicals in the world. I mean, in the United States alone, something like just over 2 billion pounds of this chemical are manufactured every year. You're quite right. I mean, this chemical is in everything from baby bottles to the lenses of my eyeglasses. This is the chemical that goes into the plastic that CDs and DVDs are made of. But the key point here is that the real risk for adults, for pregnant women, for kids, is in food contact situations. So if you have a little baby whose sole source of nutrition is infant formula from a baby bottle, that is the real danger. The baby bottle, the sippy cup, cutlery and plates that kids might eat off of. It is true that bisphenol A is in the interior lining of most cans in people's cupboards. And so to the extent that people can eat fresh or frozen food, that's one way of trying to avoid this chemical.
What was different about the kinds of studies that the Canadian government did from those that the FDA in the United States did? As I understand it, the FDA left those studies here in the U.S. to the chemical industry itself. Is that not correct, Bruce Laurie?
That's correct. And I think the issue isn't so much the studies that they're looking at or the studies that they're doing, because frankly, Canada was looking at a whole range of studies. It's really more the approach that they took. In Canada, the government took what we call a precautionary approach. So they're basically saying, you know, better safe than sorry. If the evidence is suggesting that kids might be at risk, let's just simply not use bisphenol A baby bottles. It's not as though we don't have alternatives. There's simple alternatives out there. They're cost-effective alternatives. So why take that risk with our kids?
So when you're talking about the risks, tell me about the risks that the two of you took in order to come to the conclusions you do in Slow Death by Rubber Duck.
Yeah. Well, my wife wasn't too keen on the experimentation that we did. It must be said. But
I chose not to tell mine.
Bruce.
She surely knows now, Bruce.
We were a few days in the process, and Bruce still hadn't informed his family. But what we did is we tried to structure a series of experiments that mimic everyday life, and that was the cardinal rule of our testing, because obviously it'd be very easy to show a large increase in a toxic chemical in your body if you were willing to have a bath in Teflon or to, drink a glass of mercury. I mean, you'd be sure to see an increase then, but that wouldn't be of much use because nobody does that in real life. So what we tried to do was simply to construct a series of tests over a week, tests that mimicked things that people do every day, cooking, showering, brushing their teeth. And then we were just very methodical at sampling the levels of toxic chemicals in our blood and urine throughout the week. And so what we found in the case of bisphenol A, where I did this test, and I just simply ate out of plastic containers for 48 hours. I ate a lot of canned food over a 48-hour period. I drank out of one of my eldest son's baby bottles. My wife and I didn't know any better, and so for my eldest son, we used a bisphenol A baby bottle. So I actually drank out of his baby bottle for a couple of days. I did take the nipple off first, I want to make clear, for your listeners. I drank out of that for a couple of days, and there was just an astronomical increase in bisphenol A in just 48-hour period.
Give me a sense of a normal versus abnormal level.
My levels of, in a 48-hour period, my levels of bisphenol A increased by 7.5 times, well into levels that that the Canadian government and other regulatory authorities are concerned about.
And do we have a sense of the harmful effects of bisphenol A?
Scientists are now, there's now a mountain of scientific evidence, literally hundreds of studies showing biological effects of bisphenol A in the parts per billion and parts per trillion range. So very significant effects on the growth of mammary glands in breast tissue, for instance. Very strong links with prostate problems. There was an important study that came out just last week looking at the link between bisphenol A and heart disease. All of these studies are finding effects at very, very low levels, levels that millions of Americans would experience on a daily basis. I mean, we know from U.S. government testing that about 95% of Americans have measurable levels of bisphenol A in their bodies all the time. And so we're, you know, as a society, we're literally marinating in bisphenol A and these other hormone-disrupting chemicals on a daily basis.
When you talk about hormone-disrupting processes, where could that lead you?
Well, that's really an important question, and it's core to our book. The chemicals that we tested are all defined as hormone-disrupting chemicals, which mean that when they get into your body, they mimic your genes. And so they can actually damage your genes as your body is developing. And these lead to a whole range of what we're referring to as childhood epidemics.
Bruce Laurie, he's president of the Ivy Foundation. Rick Smith, executive director of Environmental Defense Canada. Short break, right back. And welcome back. We're talking about a new book. It's titled Slow Death by Rubber Duck, The Secret Danger of Everyday Things. Just last week, the FDA issued a statement saying it has some concern about the potential effects of bisphenol A, or BPA, one of the chemicals that had been deemed safe previously after testing by the chemical industry itself. Then 2 years ago, the Canadian government took it off the market for baby bottles. What about cans, Rick Smith?
Well, cans are a difficult issue. I mean, there's only one brand of canned food that I know of, and that's Eden Foods, that does not have bisphenol A in the lining of their cans. Virtually every other company that I know of has bisphenol A in the lining of their cans.
So all the cans that we might buy from, say, Whole Foods.
That's right.
Have bisphenol A.
Yeah.
Now, there's a question here from Florida, from the parent of an autistic child, who comments that autism is on the rise. Have there been any links between BPA and autism that we know of, Rick?
Yes. I mean, there is some evidence that BPA and these other hormonally active chemicals that are leaching into our foods from plastic containers and the like, there is some evidence linking these things to autism and to other, as Bruce said, to other ailments that have had a very unexplainable increase in recent years.
We've got a whole range of diseases that doctors frankly can't explain, things like attention deficit and disorder. We have things like asthma, obesity, other childhood ailments. And the evidence now is really starting to show that it's the pervasive use of these hormone disrupting chemicals that are actually changing how kids' bodies develop.
But surely BPA is not the only one.
No, absolutely not. There's thousands of them. I mean, the majority of the chemicals we talk about in the book are classified as hormone-disrupting chemicals.
But then the question becomes, how do we as parents, as consumers, how do we, with these thousands of chemicals out there that could be classified as hormone disruptors, how do we stay away from them?
Yeah, well, one of the things when we did the tests, we found very directly that by using products that you know have more of these chemicals, you will see more of them in your blood over a very short period of time. So the good news of that is that if you stop using these products, you actually won't have those chemicals at the same levels. So there's always going to be a base level in your body because, as you said, these chemicals are all over. However, there's a few simple things that you can do as a consumer. For example, when Rick and I are out buying stuff, we try to avoid really fragrant personal care products. One of the chemicals we talk about in the book are called phthalates. It's a chemical it's the chemical that makes rubber ducks soft and rubbery. It's also the chemical that makes your shampoo smell like a rainforest. So buy low-scented, non-fragrant products. Don't microwave plastic don't microwave food in plastic containers. Avoid nonstick pans and nonstick cookware. So there's a bunch of things that you can do that will definitely reduce your exposure to these chemicals.
Now, one consumer whose name is Kristen Nelson has been in contact with Trader Joe's over the very question of whether BPA was contained in Trader Joe's cans. And at first, they said there was no BPA in those cans. What do you know about this, Rick?
Well, if that's the case, that's news to me, because we've looked into the canning industry a little bit, and I only know of one brand of food that's Eden Foods that doesn't have BPA in a lot of their cans. So if Trader Joe's has made this leap, then it's a very recent development.
No, they have finally said in a second email after saying that they did not have BPA in their cans. Then they wrote, "We have never had a public stance on the use of BPA in our canned Trader Joe's products. BPA is an epoxy used in manufacturing the plastic lining of canned goods. This resin lining in cans prevents spoilage. Is there a substitute for BPA?"
I mean, absolutely there is. I mean, there are older formulations of tin can linings that don't contain bisphenol A. I know that a number of companies are starting to look at those alternatives. I mean, there's now a very high consumer awareness, especially amongst young parents, I think, when it comes to this chemical and other kinds of hormone-disrupting chemicals. So one of the interesting phenomena that we're now seeing is large manufacturers, large retailers actually moving to get these chemicals out of their products as a way of differentiating themselves in the marketplace, even in the absence of government regulation. And certainly in Canada, that's one of the things that really helped pave the way for the Canadian government ban on bisphenol A. It was the fact that Walmart and Sears and a variety of other big retailers
in Canada,
but also almost at the same time in the United States, some very big retailers said, "Look, we care about our consumers. our customer safety is first and foremost, is in importance to us. There are other kinds of plastic baby bottles. There are glass baby bottles. We don't need to sell these baby bottles with bisphenol A, so we are taking these out of our inventory.
Just the baby bottles, nothing else.
That's right.
Okay.
But now the pressure is increasing to get bisphenol A out of the lining of infant formula cans. I think that's what's going to happen next.
All right. Tell us why you traveled to Parkersburg, West Virginia, Bruce.
Parkersburg, West Virginia is the headquarters of the DuPont facility that manufactures most of the world's Teflon. And we talk about the health effects of Teflon and nonstick products. And the particular interest in Parkersburg is that the people of Parkersburg started to get very concerned about levels of the chemical, it's called PFOA, that was in their drinking water. And once this came to the awareness of a particular resident named Joe Keeger, he decided to launch a class action or lead a class action lawsuit against DuPont, basically just to get some questions answered, like, why is this in our water? Is it going to harm us? And the local people were starting to see things, like strange things, like lots of unusual cancers, there were birth defects, there were people with respiratory illness, and they just wanted to know, is there a connection between this chemical in their water and the health effects that they were seeing in the community?
And how far did that exploration go?
Well, it was a fascinating case. It ended up being a lawsuit that was almost unprecedented in the results. It led to a $300 million court-approved settlement, where an independent epidemiological body is actually going to look at all of the health records of the residents. They've taken the blood of all of the residents. And it's going to be the first time, I think, where we're going to see some really important studies coming out around the health effects of these Teflon chemicals.
And how is the chemical industry responding thus far?
Well, so far, I think the writing's on the wall. We're going to start seeing, in fact, there's already a voluntary agreement in place that by 2015, these chemicals are going to be removed from the market. In the meantime, we have concerns that other countries are going to continue to manufacture them, or the alternatives are going to be chemical formulations that are still maybe unknown, but equally risky for us. So we're not exactly sure what the final outcome is going to be, but certainly it's raised a degree of concern among the people that, you know, we think is going to motivate some action with governments.
And joining us now from Arlington, Virginia, is Mike Walls of the American Chemistry Council. He's Vice President for Regulatory and Technical Affairs. Good morning to you, sir. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Diane. Thank you for having me.
Can you talk about the chemical industry's position on BPA?
Well, Diane, I think Rick Smith in his earlier comment indicated that he thought this was a hopeful book that they had written, and I guess in a way I agree. In fact, even after their intentional exposures to these chemicals and the elevated levels that they determined in their own testing, those exposure levels were still well within the margins of safety that more than 10 government regulatory bodies around the world have set. I think more importantly, though...
I interrupt you for just one second? Do you want to respond to that, Rick Smith?
Well, this is a key disagreement that we have with the chemical industry. I mean, the chemical industry would like people to believe that there's some magical safe level for bisphenol A and other chemicals, and human exposure is like a light switch that if you're below this magical level, everything's hunky-dory, but if you're above this magical level, then you have a problem. And you know, I think common sense would dictate that doesn't work. Exposure to hormonally active chemicals doesn't work that way. All the best scientific evidence we have with bisphenol A and phthalates and other things is that even very low levels cause some damaging effect.
And Mike, what is your reaction to the FDA's statement last week that it does have some concern.
Well, Diane, I think it's important to note that the chemicals that Rick and Bruce have focused on are among the most tested chemicals in commerce, including BPA and phthalates. I would note that not the FDA or the or even Health Canada have come to the conclusion that that there's any need to change that some of these exposures, potentially through food packaging, pose a health risk to the general population. I understand there was a recent conclusion from Health Canada to that effect. But more importantly, I think what this indicates is that the technology, the science and technology around chemistry have developed significantly in the time since our major regulatory systems have been developed. We now have the technical ability to detect more and more chemicals in more and more places at lower and lower levels. Our laws have to be updated to reflect that new science, so that we understand not just what the exposure levels is, as is in the case where Rick and Bruce have done their own testing, but what those exposure levels mean. We need to do the research on scientific to understand and interpret this data. We need to have a regulatory system that allows our government agencies to respond appropriately to risks that have been identified.
Mike Waltz of the American Chemistry Council, you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. Mike, a couple of questions. You said that BPA and other chemicals have been tested extensively. My question, by whom?
These have been tests not only conducted by the industry, but also reviews by government agencies around the world. In 2008, for example, just to talk about BPA quickly, 2008, FDA reviewed all the relevant scientific research and concluded that the science still supports the safety of BPA in food packaging. In its most recent review, just announced earlier this month, FDA upheld that previous decision. So these are, but what I think what's important here is what we need to have is a process and a regulatory process that allows us to understand what information is out there, weigh the weight of that evidence, and make decisions on the risks of these substances. Our industry, the chemical industry, firmly believes that chemicals should be safe for their intended use.
Back in 2008, as you said, the FDA regarded BPA as safe for all uses. But that was not the indication last week, was it, Rick Smith?
No, absolutely not. I mean, the FDA made a complete about-face last week. Has now said there is some cause for concern.
And they're doing more studies of their
own. They're doing more
studies.
Is
that correct?
That's right. And the FDA made a startling admission last week, which is that due to very strange grandfathering provisions under U.S. law, it actually doesn't have the legal authority to regulate BPA at all. So that's quite a startling admission.
I don't understand why.
May I respond quickly? I think it's if there's anything startling, it's the very statement of the agency last week that FDA is not recommending that families change the use of infant formula or foods. They believe it's a benefit. Those foods are a stable source of good nutrition. They firmly outweigh the potential risks of BPA exposures. Even the principal deputy commissioner of FDA asserted that if they thought BPA was unsafe, they'd take stronger regulatory action.
Mike, if I could read once again the statement provided to us by the FDA. It says, FDA now has some concerns about BPA based on the results of recent studies, and that's why we are conducting more definitive research to resolve key outstanding questions. In the meantime, we recommend that families follow some reasonable steps that are both good household practices and will also reduce exposure to BPA. That last portion, reducing exposure to BPA, would indicate, Mike, that there is some rather strong concern.
Well, again, I'm relying on the statement that FDA itself made, but
yeah.
Certainly those recommendations appear to be common sense, and as that additional research is conducted, it'll provide us some important opportunity to understand and fully evaluate the potential health effects of BPA.
Bruce Laurie.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, Mike. A big part of what we write about in the book is just people acting with common sense. And from our perspective, if there's any hint of risk when there's an available alternative, common sense suggests we should avoid those products. We shouldn't be putting them in products in the first place. And governments at some point should take action and protect the public.
Bruce Laurie, he's president of the Ivy Foundation. Mike Walls of the American Chemistry Council, Rick Smith, Executive Director of Environmental Defense Canada. If you can stay on with us, Mike, we'll take some phone calls right after this break.
National broadcast of The Diane Rehm Show is made possible in part by the William T. Grant Foundation, supporting research to improve the lives of young people. Online at wtgrantfoundation.org. By the Doris Duke Charitable Foundation, supporting the performing arts, environmental conservation, medical research, and the prevention of child abuse. And by the Alfred P. Sloan Foundation, working to enhance public understanding of science and technology in the modern world. This is NPR.
The landmark case in California challenging Proposition 8, which bans same-sex marriage, is in its second week. The case is likely to end up in the Supreme Court. On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Margaret Talbot, who wrote a background piece for The New Yorker and is blogging about the trial. Join us.
Two guests are here in the studio with me, Rick Smith and Bruce Laurie. They're co-authors of a new book. It's called Slow Death by Rubber Duck, The Secret Danger of Everyday Things. Joining us by phone is Mike Walls of the American Chemistry Council. And we're going to go to the phones as we talk about many chemicals, but most specifically BPA, because last week the FDA did a turnabout on its position regarding BPA, cautioning families to take care. Let's take a call from Portland, Michigan. Good morning, Cindy.
Hi, Diane. I am wondering why, if there's alternatives, why they're not acting now instead of waiting until 2015. Why don't they put that on hold and say, okay, you're not going to use it until further research is done on this. This is just allows more people to get sick. And another thing I'm wondering is, why do you think with the hormone-inducing, and they're saying that, you know, more and more people are becoming overweight, especially children, if it's altering hormones is one of the things that also control, like, your thyroid, your weight. Could that have something to do with that? And wasn't this also banned in Japan quite a while ago.
All right.
I mean, the word chemical infuriates you. I mean, to know that they're saying, oh, safe levels of a chemical, why are they fighting this so hard not to use it? Why
All right.
are chemical companies doing that?
Thanks for calling. Bruce Lurie.
Yeah, those are excellent questions. And in fact, one of the studies, I referred to the big study going on in Parkersburg, West Virginia, around Teflon. One of the early results of that study shows that there is a link between the chemicals that are in the water and childhood obesity. So these we're starting to see emerging evidence coming out of these health studies. And, the question around, why aren't they banning these things right now? I mean, to be honest, I have some sympathy with the companies that are out there making products like the tin can guys, or the tomato food people. They don't make the cans. They don't make bisphenol A. So, it takes a while, or the companies making pans, it's going to take a while for us to transition. I mean, should we be right now saying we should stop using this stuff? Yes. But, in reality, I think companies need a few years to make that transition.
Mike Waltz, do you see the companies in that transition period?
Diane, I think in response to the question that was asked, that there's also some important information that the Centers for Disease Control have put out. The U.S. government conducts a regular study of chemicals found in human fluids, blood, and urine, and makes periodic reports on those. It covers around 350 chemicals at this point. Even the CDC is very clear to note that the simple presence of a chemical in the human body is not an indication that it causes a health threat. However, it is an indication that there's been an exposure. And from the chemical industry's perspective, that means that we've got to step up the research on what are the health and potential environmental effects of these exposures, where did they come from, how are they affecting health and the environment, and then what regulatory or management response is necessary in order to control those risks.
Rick Smith.
Well, I think Mike is taking a few things out of context there. I just think the chemical industry has lost any credibility on this issue whatsoever. It's now very clear through a variety of media stories that the FDA during the Bush administration literally cut and pasted into allegedly objective government assessments. The industry's own assessment of its own products. I mean, just the Bush administration was working hand in glove with the industry to defend these chemicals at all costs, to forestall any regulation. The latest thing is that there was incredibly damaging, from the industry's perspective, incredibly damaging meeting minutes released in a variety of media outlets over the past few months. The BPA industry met at a Washington, D.C. hotel with the canning industry and a few other food companies back in May of 2009, and had a very cynical meeting to essentially defend BPA in the marketplace, to continue denying that there was any safety problem with BPA. At one point during the meeting, somebody suggested that they get a pregnant mom as their new spokesperson to be the figurehead of their campaign to protect BPA and baby bottles. Just incredibly cynical meeting notes that very much damaged the industry's credibility. So, I frankly think that what chemical companies are saying on this issue should be disregarded by Americans.
Well,
and the government needs to do better in bringing some regulation to this area.
Mike Waltz.
Well, Diane, you can imagine that I have a different perspective
that
Bruce has on this. First, with respect to BPA, while I'm certainly not a BPA expert, I believe that we can take some assurance in the fact that government agencies worldwide are still concluding that these substances are safe. Number two, our industry has a very strong record of working cooperatively with the Environmental Protection Agency to better understand hazards, uses, and exposures of chemicals. Do we have a perfect system here in the United States? We don't. That's why our industry has been out front talking about the fact that chemicals should be safe for their intended use. There should be processes by which the agency can prioritize action on these chemicals and can act expeditiously and efficiently in making these safe use determinations. Our industry, let me just give you one example. There are a subset of chemicals in commerce, about 3,000 chemicals, known as high production volume chemicals. They're made or imported in amounts greater than 1 million pounds a year. Our industry, in the late 1990s, came to an agreement with EPA and the Environmental Defense Fund to voluntarily develop the type of hazard information that's relevant to understand a lot of this, the hazards of these substances. Now, while we have not completed that program, the fact is that it's developed more information on more chemicals faster than any other government program.
Now,
our industry takes seriously its responsibility to have this information.
And, Mike, I think we want to take another call from Kate, who's in Hutchinson, Kansas. You're on the air.
Thank you. I have questions about some of your comments earlier about how some of the companies, such as Walmart and other major manufacturers, very quickly put products, particularly baby bottles and some other baby toys, utensils, out on the market that stated they were BPA-free. I took a little bit of disagreement with your statement that they did that because they cared for their customers. Walmart actually refused to put them out until they used up all of their bottles that already had BPA in them, sold them all. But how do we know? Is there anybody regulating whether or not their claims that those things are actually BPA-free? Is there any certifying body, anybody that's actually testing those to make sure those claims that they are BPA-free?
Rick.
I mean, the very, very good question. There have been a few notorious cases just in the past few months with manufacturers claiming that some of their products are BPA-free. It's been revealed that they are not. I mean, SIG bottles were a very well-known case a few months ago where SIG actually categorically had been denying throughout the past couple of years there was any BPA in their aluminum bottles. It turns out that there, in fact, there was. So I think the simple answer to the caller's question is that no, governments are not doing a very good job assessing these claims, but I think we're in a period of shakeout with this question. I mean, you have to have rocks in your head right now as a company to be manufacturing something, selling it as BPA free, as phthalate free, and take the chance with your brand, to be found out and to be revealed as a liar. I think a couple of companies have tried that. It hasn't worked very well for them. Their brand's been very damaged. I think companies are going to be increasingly careful about this.
Bruce, what did you learn from eating too much canned tuna fish?
Thankfully, I enjoy tuna and I eat a lot of fish. And, you know, one of our messages is, people should eat fish. It's a very healthy source of protein. Tuna and some of the other fish that are large predatory ocean fish actually have very high levels of mercury. And, fish is probably the main protein in my diet. I tended to have pretty high levels of mercury starting out. But over this 48-hour period, I ate seven meals of tuna, some tuna sandwiches, some tuna sushi, and I saw my mercury levels go up 2.5 times over that 48 period, actually into the beyond the level that EPA considers to be safe.
So what are you saying to consumers?
Well, the simple message is, and again, we want to make it really clear that for most of these chemicals, it's the developing fetus and babies and children and pregnant mothers that are most at risk. And if you fall into that category, if you're pregnant or thinking of becoming pregnant, you really shouldn't eat any tuna at all.
All right. Let's go to Dallas, Texas. Good morning, Kathy.
Good morning, Diane. I'm not a big fan of canned vegetables, but I do like the frozen vegetables in the bag. And now a lot of the companies are advertising that you can steam or microwave the vegetables in the bag. And I'm just wondering if the panel has any comments about the plastic used in the frozen vegetable bags.
Mike Walls.
Diana, I'm sorry, I'm not an expert on food packaging and don't have that information.
All right, Rick Smith.
Well, my mother always told me that I shouldn't microwave things in plastic, and it turned out to be right. The plastic is not a very strong material. It's not really meant to be heated. If you look at the results of our experiment, after a couple of days of eating food microwaved in plastic, my levels of bisphenol A went up 7.5 times. you can only imagine what the bisphenol A levels of an infant would look like if they were fed with a bisphenol A baby bottle over the period of a few years. And many parents still nuke the baby bottle just a little bit to take the chill off the formula. And anytime you heat plastic, it starts to break down into its component parts. So heating plastic is just not a good idea.
May I just quickly note that, I mean, certainly our council has put out some guidance on microwaving food and plastics. That's available at www.americanchemistry.com/plastics. We also have some, there's also a website, factsaboutbpa.org, that gives some BPA-specific guidance about microwaving foods.
And what you're saying on that website is that microwaving in plastic bags is fine?
I'm not certain that it addresses the plastic bag issue specifically.
What about the plastic bottle?
It does provide guidance on safe microwaving of foods.
I don't understand what safe microwaving of foods
provides guidance to consumers about how to approach, you know, what types of containers, et cetera, that are safe for microwaving.
Mike Wolz of the American Chemistry Council. You're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. Bruce Lurie.
Yeah, you know, these are complicated issues for the average, you know, person in their kitchen or mothers. And so we just have a really simple rule. Don't microwave in plastic.
You know, I have to report that when my children were young, we only had glass.
Yeah.
We sterilized everything in glass. Did we ever find out there were problems with sterilization in glass, Bruce?
Not that I'm aware of. My kids are teenagers right now, and I've been working on these issues for 20 years, so before my kids were born. And I didn't really know, I'd never heard of bisphenol A, you know, 20 years ago, but my gut feeling was we're not going to use plastic bottles. So I was this weirdo in the neighborhood.
Interesting.
Where I just use glass baby bottles with my
kids.
All
right, let's go finally to Dayton, Ohio. Good morning, Stan. You're on the air.
Good morning. As a lifelong cyclist, I've always used the squeezable bottles that they sell in bike stores, and more recently now I use one of those water hydration packs that has a plastic bladder in it. I'm wondering if there's any knowledge from Mr. Smith or your other guest there about any chemicals involved in those bottles.
Rick Smith.
Most plastic products have a little recycling number on them. And the little rhyme that you know, when I'm trolling around the supermarket shelves trying to, I drive my wife crazy, I sort of turn every plastic container over and I look at the little number on the bottom. The little rhyme I remember is 4, 5, 1, and 2, all the rest are bad for you. So if your hydration pack or if your water bottle has a 7 on it, it probably contains bisphenol A. If it has a 6, it's another kind of damaging plastic. So there are some plastics. We should be clear here. There's little evidence for things like polypropylene, for polyethylene, that there's a significant hormonal effect. We're only talking about some plastics, which is why I think Mike's argument is kind of a ridiculous one. I mean, for any parent out there, I mean, no parent is going to sort of take any chance with their kid if they don't have to. And when you have non-toxic plastic baby bottles out there or glass baby bottles, why not just move to those and leave the BPA behind?
Well, I think that's an important point. I mean, let's remember that the people in the chemical industry also have families and are raising children. They're not intentionally exposing their children to those types of hazards. But it does point out the important point that the potential risks faced by children should be a factor in decisions about the use of chemicals.
Indeed.
We want those decisions to consider the effects of the potential effects of a chemical on children and their exposure and whether indeed an extra margin of safety is required. And that's the type of thing that the American Chemistry Council is focused on encouraging the Congress to include in any revision to our chemical control laws.
How quickly would you expect that the FDA is going to move on BPA, that one chemical, Rick Smith?
I have no doubt, given the developing scientific evidence, that that this chemical is going to be gone from many products within a couple of years, despite what the chemical industry may be saying at the
moment. Would you agree with that, Bruce?
Yes.
And final comment for you, from you, for listeners?
Well, I think, you know, for listeners, there are there really are some simple things that you can do. We explain in quite a bit of detail the kinds of products you can avoid. And in fact, nowadays, there are fantastic resources on the Internet. There's lots of groups out there, and it should be much easier for people to protect themselves.
Bruce Laurie and Rick Smith, co-authors of Slow Death by Rubber Duck. You can see the cover of their book on our website. And we also have a link to the American Chemistry Council. Mike Walls, thank you for joining us. Thanks to all of you for listening today. I'm Diane Rehm.
The Diane Rehm Show is produced by Sandra Pinkard, Nancy Robertson, Jonathan Smith, Susan Neighbors, Denise Couture, and Monique Nazareth. The engineer is Toby Schreiner. Dori Annisman answers the phones. Visit drshow.org for audio archives and CD sales, transcripts from SoftScribe, and podcasts.